Welcome to the second hour's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
New UTPB Vice President Likes West Texas Already by Ruth Campbell. Everywhere P.J. Woolston has gone in his university roles, he's always had fun. And he expects University of Texas Permian Basin to be no different. Woolston is the new Vice President of Enrollment Management. At UTPB, Woolston oversees admissions and financial aid. He also will be a key partner in the university's efforts to increase enrollment and student success, working with student success teams, deans, department chairs, and faculty to target program growth and support high-touch efforts, a news release said. Most recently, Woolston was at a private school, Marion University in Indianapolis, where he created the Enrollment Management Division. Under his leadership, the school saw growth of more than 20% in 6 years, the release said. Marion has about 3,500 students. There are two draws here. For one, I've always wanted to be at a school that's focused on access, affordability, diversity, and inclusion. UTPB is all of that, Woolston said. He added that UTPB's mission is very much what he's been looking for. I've been really impressed with the leadership, too, because they really drive everything the university does with that focus in mind, and just for the entire region and the community, increasing the socioeconomic status of people, and really helping people grow. That's exactly what I've always wanted to do, Woolston said. He added that there is a strong personal draw, too. Because my wife was born and raised in Texas in the Houston area, so we've never been close to family in almost 20 years of marriage, he said. My parents were military. They just retired a year ago, and they retired to Houston, too. I never thought I'd be able to find a school that is as mission-driven as UTPB is, and also this close to so much family. It's just the perfect storm for all of that stuff. Being a military brat, Woolston said he has lived all over. He was born in the Salt Lake City, Utah area. He and his family lived in California, Minnesota, and Pennsylvania. My parents didn't move overseas until I was out of the house, but I don't really have roots. The only roots I have are in Texas because that's where my wife's entire family is, and especially with my parents there now, Woolston said. He earned a bachelor's degree in French from Brigham Young University, a master's in music from the University of Michigan, where he played the bassoon, and earned his doctorate in education from the University of Southern California. He worked in admissions as a student. When I was looking for my first job out of college, circumstance led me to Cincinnati State, which was a technical and community college, and that's really where I started thinking about mission, access, and affordability, Woolston said. One thing led to another, and he realized he was having fun, something he didn't expect. At first, I was just an admissions counselor, and then to be involved with financial aid, and then getting involved with enrollment planning and working with the different faculty and all the programs. You do more and more, and it gets more rewarding, he said. Woolston said Marion was a standalone private school, as opposed to UTPB, which is part of the UT system. He added that it's an exciting place to be because UTPB has such great reach. One thing that I really love about the leadership there is President Sandra Woodley is talking about doubling the number of graduates here in the next 10 to 15 years. And when a lot of schools talk about that, they're trying to steal market share, but not UTPB, he said. Where UTPB is and what President Woodley wants to do, we're really talking about doubling the number of degrees in the community. That's much more impactful and powerful. That raises the society so much more than just getting the same number of students and having them come to your school instead, he added. In talking about affordability, Woolston said Odessa has a number of ways to go after high school, from Odessa College to Midland College and UTPB. He said the area is so large, and when students go away, sometimes they find it's not the experience they wanted, and they come home. One of the things I really want to explore is how can we sort of open the doors so that you don't necessarily have to come in as a first-year student straight out of high school, but at any point that you realize this could actually work out for you, you can still come to UTPB and still get what you need, Woolston said. Woodley is also happy to have Woolston aboard. We are so fortunate to welcome such an accomplished leader to UTPB. With more than 20 years of experience, PJ will guide us through the important work ahead. UT Permian Basin is committed to growing enrollment, and we know Dr. Woolston is the right person to help us reach our goals, Woodley said in a statement. Woolston, interviewed before he arrived in Odessa, started playing the bassoon in high school and played a lot in college. At one point, that was maybe going to be my career option, and one thing led to another, and I ended up not doing that, but I have been playing since. I play with an orchestra here in Indianapolis, and my wife is actually an opera singer. She works with the opera here, so we've been performing together for years and years and years. That's something that both of us really want to do when we get there, is plug into the music scene and be involved playing and singing. She wants to teach as well, Woolston said. He and his wife, Rochelle, have four children. She teaches private voice lessons, and she sings in a whole bunch of ways. She's sung with chorale, on stage with opera. She's actually an actress. She's done a lot of theater. Our kids are into music, theater, and art, riding bikes, and sports, he said. Woolston added that he is a bicyclist also. We love everywhere we've ever been. We've just had so much fun, so we're really excited about getting down there, he added. Obituary and death notices for Saturday, August 22nd. Alicia Renee Lowe. Alicia Renee Lowe, 59, of Odessa, passed away Wednesday, August 19th at Medical Center Hospital. She was born October 7th, 1960, in Odessa, to the late Shirley Stroud and Roger Gully. She married Stanley Lowe in 1983. Alicia is survived by her husband Stanley of Odessa, son Marshall Lowe of Odessa, daughter Casey Eilers and husband Caleb of Odessa, brother Todd Gully of Bakersfield, California, sister Becky Gully of Mount Holly, North Carolina, and two grandchildren. She is preceded in death by her parents. A memorial service was held Saturday, August 22nd at Frank W. Wilson Funeral Directors, with Pastor Mike Bartlett officiating. Death notices. Yolanda Gonzalez Joven. Yolanda Gonzalez Joven, 87, died Thursday, August 20th in Odessa. Services are pending with Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa. Andrew Ramirez. Andrew Ramirez, 57, died Wednesday, August 19th in Midland. Services are pending with Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa.
Hi, this is Jack. I'm reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Sunday, August 23rd, 2020. Development. A&M. Records set for home sales, total volume, by Stuart Doreen, S-D-O-R-E-E-N, at HurstNP.com. Dollar volume of homes sold in Midland County set a record during the month of July, according to Texas A&M Real Estate Center. The $104.298 million in homes sold broke the record set in July 2019, and marked only the second time there has been more than $100 million sold in any one month in Midland County, according to the center. The dollar volume wasn't the only record broken. A new mark was set for the number of homes sold, 292, which bettered the old record of 289, also set in July 2019. Veteran realtor Victoria Prince told the Reporter-Telegram that recent activity, including July, has been a strange turnaround compared to the brutal market during a terrifying March and April. She said June was fantastic, July has been huge, and August and September are shaping up well. It is all local people who haven't been able to get into the market, Prince said. She said, incredibly, low interest rates and ample supply are likely factors. While home supplies jumped by more than 30% month over month, the inventory increased to a record level. The A&M Center reported there were 911 homes on the market at the end of July. Prince said there were 835 active listings on Friday. She said there were 338 listings under contract. It's been strange, Prince said. I would have expected a market hanging on by its toenails, but actually, it's been busy. There's not a logical reason why. Prince said her statistics show the market for homes priced at $350,000 and lower hasn't experienced much change, while the market has softened for homes priced higher. Still, the A&M Center shows the average home sold for an average of $357,186. The median price for a home sold in July was $302,500. The median price for a home sold in Midland County was nearly $80,000 more than other higher population West Texas counties. It also was higher than larger Texas counties such as Harris, Montgomery, Bayer, Dallas, and Tarrant. The months of inventory in Midland, 4.1, also topped a list of comparable West Texas counties and larger population counties across the state. Prince also said those looking to rent a house will pay 25% to 30% less, as there are 180 rentals on the market compared to 12 this time last year. Committee co-chair Robert E. doesn't represent school. By Stuart Doreen, S-D-O-R-E-E-N at HurstNP.com. Shannon Lowe isn't a graduate of Lee High School, but her husband is, and her children have maroon running through their veins. Two of her children enjoyed the Lee experience and are entering their first year of college. Another is a junior, and the youngest child attends Lee Freshman High School. And what does she make of the high school name controversy? I feel like the Robert E. never had anything to do with the school since I've been here, Lowe said. It was never on any shirt. We were just Midland Lee. It sure doesn't represent who we are. I am good with that being gone. It doesn't have a place on our school. Not long after the Midland ISD school board voted to change the name of the high school and freshman school, Lowe got the call to co-chair the Citizens Renaming Committee. She was nominated by Brian Murray, the lone board member, to vote against the decision to rename. She said, Murray felt like I had a pulse for Lee and what it was like now. Murray knows Lowe as an active parent of Lee students who are active on campus, playing sports, participating in student council, National Honor Society, and clubs. She has seen her children do it, and in turn, Lowe has been active on PTA boards and booster clubs. As she told the Reporter-Telegram, she is very connected through kids. I've never been around anything like Lee High School, she said. It is unique. Lowe said participating on the committee as the public co-chair is an enormous responsibility. Preparation included 10 to 12 hours of meetings with co-chair Blake Felt, executive director of athletics for Midland ISD. To make sure the process is very structured to ensure fairness so each member has opportunities to speak and respond. The first of up to 6 meetings took place Thursday, and Lowe said it was an opportunity for committee members and see the Lee High School and Midland experience in the room. She expects that by the third meeting, committee members will have the opportunity to present name recommendations. Ultimately, the committee will present 3 names to district leaders who will present those to the board. The top recommendation will be the name that received the most votes. Lowe echoed the Felt's words that nothing is off the table. The committee members received information about how San Antonio ISD and Tyler ISD went about their name changes. Of Robert E. Lee to Lee in San Antonio was able to keep the Lee acronym by renaming the school Legacy of Educational Excellence. There has been a push, including a petition drive, to have a similar option for the Lehigh School and Freshman School in Midland. At the end of the day, Midland is unique. What one community does doesn't matter here because we all try to do what is best for us. Business. Midland unemployment continues to trend lower. MSA inched down to 9.4% in July from 9.5% in June. By Mella McEwen, MMCEWEN at MRT.com. Midland's unemployment continues to trend lower, recording a second monthly decline as the rate retreats from its high of 12.6% recorded in May. The Texas Workforce Commission said Friday that unemployment in its Midland Metropolitan Statistical Area, which includes Midland and Martin counties, dipped to 9.4% in July and from 9.5% in June. That remains far above the July 2019 employment of 2.2%. While Odessa reported an unemployment rate decline similar to Midland, dipping from 12.6 to 12.7 in June, the city recorded the state's highest unemployment for a second consecutive month. I think we're seeing it trend in the right direction, Willie Taylor, chief executive officer of the Commission's Workforce Solutions Permian Basin, told the MRT. He said the number of unemployment insurance benefit claims is also trending lower. Despite the hurdles caused by the COVID-19 pandemic, Taylor said his office tries to hold virtual job fairs every other week to ensure we get people back to work. One is scheduled for this week with Medical Center Hospital. The issue with getting unemployed people back to work is child care, Taylor said. Region-wide, the waiting list for child care is 900. With West Texas split almost evenly between men and women, he said it presents a challenge to single parents trying to return to work. With a new child care provider contract set to take effect next month, he said he hopes those issues will soon be addressed. The region's dominant industry sector, oil and gas, has been hit hard by the twin blows of the COVID-19 pandemic and the economic woes of the dominant oil and gas industry. It tells us we need to focus on trying to diversify our industry base to make sure we can sustain ourselves through these downturns. Midland's civilian labor force grew by 120 from June to July to 102,658. Still, it remains about 8,900 below the recorded last July. Supporting the market was the fact that about 250 residents joined the ranks of the employed, which grew to 93,040, but is 16,000 below the employment rate a year ago. The number of unemployed residents shrank by about 100 to 9,618. Though Midland's unemployment rate continues to decline, the Tall City still shed 1,200 total non-farm jobs from June to July. The dominant mining, logging, and construction sector lost 800 jobs, followed by the leisure and hospitality sector with 400 jobs lost. The trade, transportation, and utility sector and the government sector each lost 100. Education and health services was the only sector to gain, adding 200 jobs during the month. For the 21 months from July 2019 to July 2020, the mining, logging, construction sector has shed 11,500 jobs. The trade, transportation, and utility sectors followed with a loss of 1,800 jobs, and the leisure and hospitality sector with 1,400 jobs. The other services sector lost 800 jobs, and the government sector 400 jobs. The manufacturing sector and the financial sector each lost 300, and the education and health services sector 200. The information professional and business services sector each 100 jobs. Statewide, the unemployment rate dropped to 8%. The third consecutive monthly decline. Amarillo recorded the state's lowest unemployment at 5.1%, followed by College Station Bryan and Abilene and Sherman Denison. One Permian County cited as leader for property tax value. By Stuart Doreen, S-D-O-R-E-E-N at HearstMP.com. Two Permian Basin counties were among the top 10 in the state for those that received the most value in their property taxes, according to a study by SmartAsset.com. The financial technology company reported the study aimed to find the places getting the most value for their property tax dollars. To do this, SmartAsset reports looked at property taxes paid, school rankings, and the change in property values over a 5-year period. Ward County, Monahans, ranked first. Pecos County, Fort Stockton, ranked ninth. Midland County ranked 162nd overall in the state and 1,884th in the nation. Midland County also ranked 37th in Texas in home value growth, 187th in school value, and 120th for the lowest average property tax. Lastly, the report showed a median home value of $187,400 in Midland, a median annual property tax payment of $2,723, and an average effective property tax rate of 1.45%. Weekly count below 200 for the first time since mid-June by Stuart Doreen, S-D-O-R-E-E-N, at HurstMP.com. In terms of new coronavirus cases, last week's count was the lowest going back to June 14th, according to Reporter Telegram records. The Midland Health Department reported that not even 71 new cases on Friday could lift the total number of cases above 200, and the 194 cases reported Monday through Friday was about half the number of cases reported each week from July through August. When it came to deaths, the nine reported this week were the most going back to July 19th, when 10 were reported. While the number of cases appears to be on a downward trend, the number of deaths is still at a high level. In July, there were 27. This month, there have been 20. At the end of the week, the Midland Health Department reported 1,081 isolated cases, 1,367 recovered, 414 under investigation, and 158 unable to locate or refuse to talk.
Hello, this is Michael. I'm reading one additional story from the Sunday, August 23rd Midland Reporter Telegram. Reward offered for information on missing woman from staff reports. Midland Crime Stoppers and the Midland County Sheriff's Office are offering a $2,500 reward for anyone who has information on the whereabout of a woman who was reportedly last seen in Midland in 2018. Caitlin Dennison, 22, was last seen on January 10, 2018, after she allegedly flew into Midland from Reno, Nevada, with an unidentified male who resides in Midland, according to a previous Reporter Telegram report. Deputies received information on March 13, 2019, from an anonymous source in reference to a possible homicide of a white female with blonde hair in the Midland County city limits. Authorities conducted an investigation and found clothing artifacts that possibly belonged to Dennison, according to Midland Crime Stoppers. Dennison is described as 5 feet tall, with a petite build and blonde hair and blue eyes. She has 3 tattoos, the word alien and the letter M on her left knuckle, and the Libra scale on her right forearm. Several piercings. 2 piercings on each side of her nose, a piercing on her bottom lip, a tongue piercing, and Medusa piercing, and scars on her arms and legs, according to the description on the DPS website. Dennison was last seen wearing a fur vest over a black shirt, black leggings with braiding down the sides of the legs, and furry boots.
Hi, this is Linda. I'm reading the Odessa American for Sunday, August 23rd, 2020. Section A. Odessa Remembers and Honors Victims by Laura Dennis. The Odessa American will spend the next 8 days offering up stories of triumph over tragedy as the one-year anniversary of the mass shooting approaches. Odessa's darkest day is not a day of celebration, as anniversaries often are, but rather a time to reflect on the hundreds, if not thousands, of lives impacted by the shooting deaths of 7 people and the wounding of 25 others on that hot Labor Day Saturday last year. It's hard to believe it has been a year. Preparing these stories has been a labor of love for the staff. We've met some remarkable people who are either learning to live without a loved one or who are continuing to heal from injuries from that terrible day. You won't read much about the deceased gunman, Seth Aaron Ader. We know from reports that he was a troubled man with a history of run-ins with law enforcement, both here in Odessa and in other cities. None of the run-ins indicated that Ader would kill 7 and injure 25 others during an hour-long shooting spree that began on Interstate 20 in Midland County and ended with him being shot to death by multiple law enforcement agencies at Odessa's Synergy Theater, August 31st, 2019. But no more about Ader. Not for now. Today's edition and those until September 1st seek to highlight resilience and heroics and how Odessa will honor those lost and those injured during events planned by local ministers, the City of Odessa, and Odessa's Chamber of Commerce. So many heroes. There are so many folks who need a spotlight. Many remain nameless as some of the shooting victims still hope to learn about that OPD officer or deputy or firefighter who helped them during the chaos of the mass shooting. You'll meet California native Joe Glide, who was shot twice on Interstate 20 and had a third bullet lodge in what we can only call a really, really lucky wallet. Joe was helped by an OPD officer who triaged him before DPS officers raced him to Medical Center Hospital. Joe would still like to know the name of that officer. That's about the same as Andrews resident and retired teacher Penny Moore. Penny is the only one of the 25 victims who was not shot. She continues to recover from breaking an ankle, running out of and then back into Synergy Theater that day as law enforcement and Ader engaged in that final showdown. She would like to know the name of the off-duty or retired firefighter who carried her back into the theater. Another hero who doesn't wear a badge or equipment, but who came to the aid of all of Odessa, actually did so from the Texas Rangers parking lot in Arlington. Letita Chavez and her husband had made the trip to watch a Rangers game when she got a call from a coworker who was working in Odessa in the city dispatch center. Chavez said she stayed in the car while the Rangers played and called more people to go into work, including the dispatch supervisors and wrecker services. Remarkable folks. All of the family members of those who were lost and also the surviving victims praised the medical care they received at Medical Center Hospital, Midland Memorial, and Odessa Regional Medical Center. Not a single complaint. Most expressed gratitude for how the hospitals agreed to absorb charges not covered by insurance. They also all talk about the help of Odessans through fundraising and food, and even just stopping by to say hello. Many also gush about how Texas Governor Greg Abbott, U.S. Senator Ted Cruz, Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick, State Representative Brooks Landgraf, Chief Mike Gerke and Sheriff Mike Griffiths, MCH CEO Russell Tippin, and others visited them while they were in the hospital. There are also plenty of heartfelt thanks to Odessans for the generosity of donations. Many mention Odessa businessman John Bushman and Odessa Chamber of Commerce President and CEO Renee Earls as people who sought to help all of those affected by the tragedy. Earls headed up a chamber fundraising effort that helped all of the victims. She also met with family members and victims during the last year. That Odessa Community Foundation Fund raised more than $1 million for the victims. We'll also tell you more about a planned memorial that will have a design and artist announcement in the next week. Put up a yellow ribbon and spend 32 seconds in silence at 3 p.m. August 31st. And remember the survivors and the families of the victims. Deceased Layla Hernandez, 15, Odessa. Joe Griffith, 40, Odessa. Mary Granados, 29, Odessa. Edwin Peregrino, 25, Odessa. Rodolfo Julio Arco, 57, Odessa. Cameron Caritas Brown, 30, Brownwood. Raul Garcia, 35, El Paso. Injured. Nathan Hernandez, 18, Odessa. Mark Gonzalez, 38, Odessa. Zachary Owens, Midland Police Department. Timothy Beard, 55, San Antonio. James Santana, Odessa Police Department. Glenda Dempsey, 62, Odessa. Marco Carral, 62, San Diego, California. Coy Edge, 53, Odessa. Joseph Glide, 60, Odessa. Anderson Davis, 17 months, Odessa. Daniel Munoz, 28, Yuma, Arizona. Robert Cavazos, 38, Alice, Texas. Maria Boado, 27, Hialeah, Florida. Efe Obayagomona, 45, Round Rock, Texas. Bradley Grimsley, 64, Clarksville, Texas. Chuck Pryor, Texas Department of Public Safety. Timothy Hardaway, 54, Brownwood. Kadri Fatal, 41, Houston. Jesus Alvidrez, 21, Gardendale. Lilia Diaz, 46, Odessa. Crystal Lee, 36, Odessa. Larry Shores, 34, Abilene. Colton Rayenga, 9, Odessa. Penny Moore, 55, Odessa. Wanda Silvas, 74, Odessa. Why Did This Happen to Rudy? By Lee Scheid. Barry Arco was 21 when she escaped from Fidel Castro-controlled Cuba in 1999, one of 15 passengers aboard a speedboat racing northeast toward freedom, searching for a better life and future. A year later, while working in Las Vegas, she felt she had found both after meeting Rodolfo Arco, the man who would become her husband. Rudy, to his family and friends, was also a Cuban immigrant, coming to the United States with his family in 1969 when he was 7, their only possessions, the clothes on their backs. They moved from Miami to the San Francisco area. Rudy Arco moved to Las Vegas in his early 30s. Their paths crossed in 2000 when Barry was working at the Paris casino and Rudy said hello. I said, "Oh, you're Cuban." And he said, "Yes." And we started talking, Barry said. "After that, that's it. He never let me go free again," she added with a laugh. "At the beginning, I was like, you're too American for me." Their first date was to Rudy's favorite Mexican restaurant in Las Vegas, something that Barry wasn't too sure of, never having had tacos, burritos, or even hamburgers. So when the tortillas came out white, she wasn't sure she was going to like the food. That quickly changed. "The tortillas came out like bread you didn't put in the oven," she said. "I was used to Cuban food, and that's it. At the end of it all, it was my favorite." They got married that same year and opened a janitorial service, Arco Building Maintenance, with accounts all over the city. At the same time, they opened a pair of Super B Burritos restaurants, one in Las Vegas and the other in nearby Henderson, and welcomed two daughters, Marissa and Melissa, to the world to join Arco's children from a previous marriage, Juliana and Artie. "We reached the American dream," Barry said. "We have a beautiful home on 1 acre of land that he fixed for me how I wanted it." When the Route 91 Harvest Music Festival shooting, which killed 58 people and injured hundreds more, happened on October 1st, 2017 in Las Vegas, Rodolfo Arco began looking for a safer place to raise his family. The family settled on Odessa, selling both restaurants and their house in Nevada, and opened Arco Express Company in 2018. We don't know why we decided to move to Odessa, Barry said. One of our drivers in Vegas talked about it, and we did our research, and I said fine, because I didn't want to be in the restaurants all day because of the girls. So maybe it's time for me to sell the restaurants, and we'll do trucking and do well. All was well with the Arcos as they settled into life in West Texas. Living in the city, they had purchased a home in Pleasant Farms and were waiting for that to be finished. Then came August 31st, 2019. Tragedy. Rudy wasn't answering the phone, and that had everyone in the family worried. Barry was visiting her mother in Florida with her two youngest daughters, Marissa and Melissa. They were down there waiting for the work on the house in Pleasant Farms to wrap up so they could move in. Rudy was still in West Texas driving the truck, but Barry and the girls wanted to see him. I told him that we missed him so much, that we want to see you, she said. I said, come here and spend a week, 2 weeks, whatever you can spend, and when the house is ready, we'll go there with you. So he went to Florida, and we spent a week playing in the ocean. Thank God he came down. A few days after Rudy returned to Odessa, Barry got a call from Rudy's daughter, Juliana, telling her about the shootings in Odessa and Midland. Barry had received a text message from Rudy at 2:43 p.m., but after she received the call from her stepdaughter, she couldn't get in touch with him. Rudy Arco had been shot and killed by Seth Ader while driving in Midland. By the time I tried to call him back, it was too late, she said, tears streaming down her face. I called Julie back and asked her to call him, and I was calling and texting. I was getting worried because if you call my husband at 3 o'clock in the morning, he will answer the phone. So I was like, there's something going on. I don't like it. Ader would kill 7 people and wound 25 others before being killed by law enforcement officers later in the day. Barry held out hope that her husband was stuck on the side of the road, having told her earlier in the day of trouble with the truck. She continued to call, still receiving no answer. I thought he might be stuck in the middle of nowhere, but the phone was ringing and ringing and not going to voicemail, she said. I called Julie and told her she needed to leave work and start looking for Rudy. Barry called Sandbox Logistics in Midland and was told that the truck had been in an accident, sending Barry a picture of the crash. Barry then told her daughter to go to the hospital. During her drive to the hospital, Juliana came upon the accident with the truck cordoned off with yellow tape. When she tried to get closer, police wouldn't allow it as it was a crime scene. Juliana then went to the hospital, asking everyone if they knew anything about her father. Finally, a police officer said that someone would be out to talk with her. When the official finally did talk to her, the family's worst fears were confirmed when he said, "By the way, I'm sorry for your loss." Juliana then had to call Barry in Florida to break the news. Barry never thought for 1 minute she was going to be told that her husband had been killed. She just knew Rudy would be fine because of every 3 words he said, 2 would be about God. When the news was delivered, Barry was in shock, yet had to hold her emotions in check for her 2 younger daughters. She flew back home September 1st and went straight to her pastor, the Reverend Griffin Jones at Crossroads Fellowship, and asked, why? Why did this happen to Rudy? Why? Moving forward, they held the memorial service for Rudy on September 14th at Crossroads Church, a celebration of a life cut short. Barry and her daughters never lived in the house in Pleasant Farms, choosing to rent it out instead. Juliana and her husband, who was waiting to relieve Rudy on that fateful day, moved to Michigan to be near his family after the oil field work disappeared with the onset of the COVID-19 pandemic. Both Juliana and Artie will be in Odessa to be with Barry and the younger girls as the anniversary approaches. The question that she asked of Jones on September 1st, she says she is trying not to ask it still to this day. She knows that she has to be strong for her daughters and that no one is going to be able to give her the answer she really wants. Barry also knows that she has to do something to keep busy, to get out and become part of the community that she has grown to love. "I like the town. I don't know why," she said. "I really like Odessa. It's peaceful. I feel comfortable here. Rudy said, let's try to open a burrito restaurant here, and that's what I'm going to try to do." Barry has picked a spot in downtown Odessa at 511 North Grant for her newest venture that combines her heritage and her newfound love of Mexican food. She is opening a venue that will feature foods from her home country along with some of the best-selling items from her Vegas establishments. Brightly lit and airy, with pictures of Cuban landmarks and the ocean adorning the walls and dominoes tables around the hardwood floor, the Permian Basin's newest culinary entry is aiming for an opening day of October 1st. "I am going to be cooking everything fresh every day," she said. "We will have a combination of Cuban food and Mexican food, along with fresh juices. We have to keep moving forward." A family's grief. He survived both Afghanistan and Iraq to die alone in his work truck on Yukon Road near Ratliff Stadium. His family has spent the last year learning to live without him. Read about Cameron Brown in Monday's OA. Semper Fi. A former Marine spent months recovering following the mass shooting. Meet Brad Grimsley, the first civilian shot last year, who calls his survival a miracle. Don't miss the story in Monday's OA. Lucky Wallet. Joe Glide says he has angels watching over him despite being shot twice last year, once in the leg, once in the abdomen. A third bullet struck his wallet and lodged there. Learn about his road to recovery in Wednesday's OA. 911 Center. Frantic calls from all over town lit up the phones at Odessa's dispatch August 31st of last year. They have had time to reflect on that tragic day and how their office rose to the occasion. See Thursday's Odessa American. Helping Hands. An Andrews woman is thankful that she wasn't shot, but continues to recover from an injury that sidelined her for months. See Friday's OA for more on her recovery. Stitching a Memorial. Some West Texas quilters are using their talents to honor the victims of the August 31st mass shooting. Take a look at these works of art in Saturday's OA. Top Cops. Odessa's top lawmen talk about what was learned from the tragedy and how law enforcement has coped during the last 12 months. Don't miss the August 30th OA. A Family Man. Perla Garcia was widowed after 15 years and four children with husband Raul, who was killed driving his truck near Odessa. He was a good father and he was hardworking. He loved his kids. They were everything to him. Perla reflects on his life and on life without him in the August 30th OA. Sweet Anderson. The tiniest victim of the mass shooting is a precious toddler, and her family is giving back in big ways to Odessa. Meet the Davis family in the August 31st OA. CBS 7 launches hour-long newscast by Michael Bauer. Starting this Monday, CBS 7 will give its viewers an opportunity to receive more local coverage in the afternoon with the addition of its hour-long newscast. The newscast will last from 4 to 5 p.m., with its local news continuing with its slot from 5 to 5:30 p.m. Previously, CBS 7 had been running two 30-minute local newscasts in the afternoon at 5 p.m. and 6 p.m., with CBS Evening News in between. Now, the whole news window will be from 4 to 5:30 p.m., followed by CBS Evening News at 5:30 p.m., before returning with its local news slot at 6 p.m. With the extended newscast, CBS 7 News Director Scott Pickey says it will enable reporters to dedicate more time to events around the area. "We just feel that local communities can always use more local news coverage," Pickey said. "The hour will allow us to do a lot more, like longer interviews with local newsmakers or community organizers or nonprofit CEOs. We're just really excited to be able to do another local hour of news earlier in the afternoon that will allow people to get caught up before 5, especially if we have breaking news that day. It'll allow us to get it on the air an hour earlier with all the information the viewers will need." Pickey said the idea of doing an hour-long newscast has been in the works for a while, and that it took plenty of time trying to decide what time of the day works best for the viewers. "It had been a conversation that we've been having for a long time about how we can have more local news and where we should put it and what was the most advantageous for the viewer. And we decided that tacking on that extra hour before our 5 p.m. newscast will allow us to do 90 minutes of as much local news as we can," he said. "I think a sign of a local television station growing and becoming stronger is the addition of more local news coverage. Going with a 4 p.m. slot," Pickey said, "will help them give viewers a chance to get local news an hour earlier. I think a 4 p.m. viewer is pretty unique," Pickey said. "They're at home, or some people might still be at work, or whatever they have going on that day, and there's not a lot to choose from locally that day. We all do 5 and 6 shows, but allowing us to be on the air at 4, and if there's a big story that day, instead of waiting until 5 or 6 to get it, now we're able to discuss it at 4. The extra time will also allow them to dig deeper, to add more context to a story. We're treating this 4 to 5 block with the philosophy that we can be a little more relaxed and that we can spend a little more time with bigger stories. And if we need to dig deeper, that allows us the ability to do that," Pickey said. With the pandemic going on, forcing a slowing economy, news stations across the country have felt the pinch in ad revenue. But Pickey said that expanding its local news coverage will help them grow and be ready when the business starts to pick up again. "Throughout the pandemic, every station in the country has felt the withdrawal of advertisers wanting to buy commercials. But we're looking forward and know that eventually that will all change. We want to be in a position where when people start spending money again, we'll have a newscast where they can do that in," Pickey said. Local news roundup. Antibody testing. Medical Center Health System Laboratory is offering antibody testing by appointment only. The COVID-19 antibody test is a lab test performed on blood that may determine if an individual has produced an antibody to the COVID-19 virus. Learning if you have COVID-19 antibodies will let you know if you have been exposed to the virus and if you developed an immune response. This immunity may protect you from COVID-19 reinfection and make you eligible to donate your plasma to critically ill COVID-19 patients. This test does not tell you if you are currently positive for the COVID-19 virus. Testing cost is $20. To request an appointment, visit mchodessa.com/regional lab. For more information, call 640-3924. Permian Basin Gives. Basin PBS has scheduled Permian Basin Gives fundraising event for 106 nonprofits from across the Permian Basin this Tuesday. As part of the day's activities, Basin PBS will hold a two-hour telethon from 7 to 9 p.m. Giving days are designed for individual donors who may feel that the amount they could donate would be too small to have an impact. However, there's power in numbers, and area nonprofits will use Permian Basin Gives as an opportunity to encourage individual donors to make a bigger impact by giving at the same time. In addition, many of the agencies participating will have a donor to match all gifts made through the Permian Basin Gives. For more information on participating agencies or to make a donation, visit www.permianbasingives.org. To Your Good Health by Dr. Keith Roach. Soda on the Vice Spectrum. Dear Dr. Roach, I've never smoked, drank alcohol, or used illegal drugs. My doctor says I'm in great health. My only vice is drinking diet soda, and I drink 3 or 4 cans a day. I'd like to know what you think about it. I know it's not great for me, but I figure it's better than the other vices. PV. Answer. I'm not sure vice is the correct term. Compared with sugar-sweetened soft drinks, diet sodas are probably less harmful in several ways. Compared with plain water, they probably have some drawbacks. The effects vary by person, and the literature on this subject is mixed and controversial. For your teeth, less sugar means less cavities. However, diet sodas are acidic, and drinking too many can weaken the enamel on your teeth. The effect of diet sodas on weight is complicated. Paradoxically, many people will gain weight when switching to diet soda. Scientists believe this is due to effects on the bacteria in the intestines, the microbiome. Consuming sweet beverages may also stimulate the desire for other sweets and less healthy foods. Some of the sweeteners in diet sodas can cause intestinal problems in susceptible people, especially diarrhea and gas. If you have no symptoms from drinking diet sodas, have no weight issues, get your teeth checked regularly, and have good oral hygiene, then the risk from 3 or 4 daily cans of diet soda is modest. It's still better to drink plain water.
Dear Abby, for Monday, August 24th. Family wishes to acknowledge friend support and devotion. Dear Abby, my family has suffered a great loss. My older sister died by suicide. My younger sister's best friend, Carrie, drove 4 hours from Michigan to be with our family. From the day after we found out, and for almost a week, Carrie was by our side, comforting us, helping with arrangements, and anything else that needed to be done. She even worked all night with our old family videos to digitize, edit, and set them to music so it would be done in time for the wake. Now, as we are beginning to write thank you notes to all of those who were there for us, my family is wondering how we can express our gratitude to her for her support during this awful time. We would like to do or give her something special because we truly consider her to be a part of our family, but we don't know what. Appreciative in the East. Dear Appreciative, the head of the family or your younger sister should write Carrie a letter telling her how much her kindness is appreciated and telling her she is now truly a member of the family. I'm sure it would mean the world to her. In addition, consider giving her something that belonged to your older sister, such as a piece of jewelry. Your younger sister should be the person to select it. A keepsake would, I am sure, be deeply appreciated and treasured. Dear Abby, at age 17, my pregnant and unwed mother married a schoolmate of my biological father. I was given the schoolmate's last name. Several years later, my mother divorced her first husband and married my biological father. They discussed changing my last name to that of my bio father, but never did. I recently had DNA testing that proved this information to be accurate. My last name is still not the name of my biological father, and I recently learned that the man named on my birth certificate was a rapist, an alcoholic, and a bully. This is very upsetting, and I would like to legally change my name to match my actual father's. The problem is now I'm 70, married with wonderful kids and grandkids who are proud of our name. I don't want the fake daddy's name on my tombstone. Any advice for this distressed guy? Distressed senior man. Dear distressed, talk to your family about why you want the name change. Perhaps when they hear that the person whose name was thrust upon you was a rapist and substance abusing bully who mistreated your mother, they will be more understanding and less willing to cling to the name they are so proud of. If not, then suit yourself. I wish you luck. Dear Abby, my boyfriend and I have been living together for 10 years, although he is still legally married. When we met, he and his wife had been separated for 5 years. Neither one had the money to get divorced. My question is, if anything should happen to my boyfriend, would she have claim to any of his assets? He doesn't have much beyond his vehicle. Just Wondering in Pennsylvania. Dear Just Wondering, yes, as his surviving spouse, she will be entitled to whatever assets he leaves behind, which includes the vehicle.
Jacqueline Bigger Stars by Madeline Aslan. The stars show the kind of day you'll have. 5 dynamic, 4 positive, 3 average, 2 so-so, 1 difficult. A baby born today has a sun in Virgo and a moon in Scorpio. Happy birthday for Monday, August 24, 2020. Astute, sophisticated, and investigative, as a complex individual, your observations are brilliant. You succeed very well this year. The first half is challenging, but you were born to untangle mysteries, and you make money doing this. If single, you give your relationships a hard time, so it's likely you stay single this year. If attached, you are wildly in love, and you wouldn't have it any other way. Cancer worships you. Aries, March 21 through April 19. 4 stars. Financial obligations relating to others can be resolved. Sincerity is the best way to process and release old resentments. Get in touch with how you really feel and let others know. Tonight, expect news of a status change concerning a couple to whom you're close. Taurus, April 20 through May 20. 5 stars. Get partners talking and be a good listener. Someone close to you is making important decisions about their future. There is a new slant on partnership and commitment issues. This is punctuated by turning points and surprises. Tonight, be relieved you offered the best advice. Gemini, May 21 through June 20. 5 stars. Your birth sign's cell salt is potassium chloride. Your cell salt stimulates better absorption of nutrients. Lifesaver. Strawberries, parsley, blueberries, pineapple, cucumbers, and asparagus are good sources for your cell salt. Tonight, poke around recipes to find these ingredients. Cancer, June 21 through July 22. 2 stars. A very intense day promises reunions with lost loves. Loyalties and attachments are in flux. Be sensitive to repeating patterns involving heart connections. Communication with those near and dear to you is excellent. Tonight, acquaintances inspire you. Facts come to light. Leo, July 23 through August 22. 4 stars. Today highlights your home and family life. Patiently work out differences and make needed repairs. Shop for the best prices for items for the home. A family member is feeling very adventurous and may surprise you by taking a gamble. Tonight, take the latter with a grain of salt. Virgo, August 23 through September 22. 5 stars. Emails and conversations will be serious, but decisions can be made and helpful advice exchanged. Avoid a difficult neighbor or troubled sibling. You'll express ideas eloquently and have a special ability to solve problems by compromise. Tonight, relax and celebrate yourself. Libra, September 23 through October 22. 5 stars. Libra likes the finer things in life, and splendid financial opportunities are beginning to manifest. Be careful not to overextend yourself, however. Go easy on spending. Live within your means, or there could be consequences very shortly. Tonight is the very shortly, a dissatisfying product. Scorpio, October 23 through November 21. 5 stars. Self-sufficient, with inherent courage and determination, Scorpio surmounts most obstacles. You are also inventive and gifted. Celebrate yourself and your amazing qualities today. Share with those who love you without complaint. Tonight, some recovery followed by early Betty buys. Sagittarius, November 22 through December 21. 4 stars. Old and poignant memories surface today. A past life regression might be useful to aid in understanding and accepting the present situation. A deep rapport with creatures and animals of wilderness areas prevails. Tonight, stroll outdoors at sunset and gaze at the sky. Capricorn, December 22 through January 19. 2 stars. Fear is the dark room where negatives are developed. Despite a setback today, you do not give up. Consider your goals and group affiliations. A sense of deja vu prevails. Examine old photos to help you make wise choices. Tonight, reconnect with an old organization. Aquarius, January 20 through February 18. 4 stars. Social contacts and creative ideas boost your career today. Important responsibilities need your attention. Maintain a positive mental outlook. Use diplomacy in all that you say and write. Efforts made now will bring advancement and money in the future. Tonight, collapse in utter well-deserved exhaustion. Pisces, February 19 through March 20. 5 stars. Today you have a genuine zest for life. You'll be ready for journeys and adventures of all kinds with the added blessing of great physical vitality. Enter contests and competitions. Creativity and charm abound. Tonight, travel would be rewarding, especially if you're able to travel abroad. Born today, writer Jean Rhys, 1890, writer Jorge Luis Borges, 1899, comedian Stephen Fry, 1957.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.